Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Okay, Julia.
Okay, thank you very much, Hans. Good morning, everyone. I will hand it over to Ashley in a minute, but I wanted to start with a quick introduction of what we would like to achieve today. So you will remember that in April we discussed two approaches that we were developing for a particular subset of transactions within the scope of the project. So those approaches that we discussed in April had a couple of challenges or weaknesses. So the approach we will present to you today seeks to address the challenges that were identified in the previous approaches. What I would like to highlight is that the measurement objective of the revised approach is still the same. We're still looking to capture the values exchanged as opposed to look at the transaction cost. But the way to capture the mechanics are slightly different. And of course, the approach we'll present today has its own weaknesses. And so at some point in the future, we will ask you which approach or approaches you would like us to explore further for the purposes of inclusion in the next due process document. But your initial reactions and questions and comments would be very helpful for us as we keep working on the approaches. And so today, we will start with a recap of the approaches that we discussed in April to make sure we're all on the same page, and then present the new approach. With that, I have a couple of questions.
Thank you, Yulia. So now I'll take you through Agenda Paper 23. Again, I just would like to reiterate that the transactions that we're looking at and the approaches that we're presenting and developed are about for a specific set of transactions within the scope. And it's also relating to what we've already discussed in April. So where Entity A and Entity B are both controlled by the same controlling party, Entity P, and Entity A acquires Entity B. And there is some non-controlling interests or shareholders in Entity A, which is our receiving entity. We discussed two approaches last month, the full fair value approach and the ceiling approach. And more detail on those approaches are available in the Appendix 1, which kind of just copy the material that was provided in April. The underlying principles that we considered for this specific subset of transactions included that the information about the fair values exchange, rather than the carrying amounts exchange, is useful for NCI. And we should seek to identify and account for any equity transaction. These two principles build on existing standards, both IFRS 3 and IS 1. So now I will go through a quick recap of those approaches. The full fair value approach considers the transaction from a market participant perspective and reflects the fair values exchange. That means it does not capture any potential synergies unique to the combining entities. Goodwill is the difference between the fair value of the acquired business and the fair value of the acquired identifiable net assets. Thus, there is some internally generated goodwill that would be captured. There is no gain to be recognized, and an equity transaction would be recognized if the fair value of the consideration transferred is greater than the fair value of the acquired business as a distribution from equity, or the fair value of the consideration transferred is less than the fair value of the acquired business as a contribution to equity. So under the full fair value approach, in an equity transaction is always identified and measured by the fair value of the acquired business. The ceiling approach considers the fair values exchange, but focuses on avoiding any inflated goodwill. Goodwill is the difference between the fair value of the consideration transferred and the fair value of the acquired identifiable net assets, but is capped at the fair value of the acquired business. So again, it does not capture any synergies between the combining entities. And similar to the full fair value approach, there's no gain to be recognized. An equity transaction would be recognized if the fair value of the consideration transferred is greater than the fair value of the acquired business as a distribution from equity, and the fair value of the consideration transferred, if it is less than the fair value of the acquired identifiable net assets, a contribution would be recognized to equity.
So, and maybe just sort of help you navigate a little bit. So we were on slide 9, and now we're moving to slide 10.
Yes. But I would like to note that under the ceiling approach, the fair value of the acquired business not only acts as a cap for measuring goodwill, but also as a floor for identifying the and measuring the distribution from equity. However, a contribution to equity is identified and measured by comparing the consideration to the fair value of the acquired identifiable net assets. So the examples that illustrate these mechanics are also available in Appendix 1 for you. To summarize, I'll turn to slide 10 now. Both approaches we discussed in April pose following challenges, although to a differing degree. So for cost and complexity related to determining fair values, in particular, the fair value of the acquired business, measurement uncertainty related to not only determining fair values, but notably to recognition of amounts based on the single estimate of the fair value of acquired business. And finally, the fact that any potential synergies between the combining parties would not be taken into account because goodwill is capped at internally generated goodwill in the acquired business. So you can kind of see that all of these challenges relate to using the fair value of the acquired business. On slide 11, we will now look at to which extent the challenges arise under either approach and whether they also arise under existing standards. So let's first look at cost and complexity related to determining the fair value of the acquired business. For the full fair value approach, it is required in all scenarios. In the ceiling approach, however, it only arises when the fair value of the consideration transferred is greater than the fair value of the acquired identifiable net assets. And just to remind you that the fair value of the consideration transferred, if it is less than the fair value of the acquired identifiable net assets, the difference is recognized as a contribution to equity, and there is no need to determine the fair value of the acquired business. And finally, this challenge does not arise in existing standards because IFRS 3 uses the fair value of the consideration transferred as a basis for all the calculations. Now looking at measurement uncertainty, related to the recognitions in financial statements of the amounts based on the single estimate of the fair value of the acquired business. In the fair value approach, it is present in all scenarios because you would need to determine and measure both goodwill and any equity transaction, and it will always be linked to the fair value of the acquired business. For the ceiling approach, it is only recognized, it is only needed for the fair value of the consideration transferred being greater than the fair value of the acquired business. And in this case, it determines both the recognition of goodwill and any equity transaction. Again, if the fair value of the consideration transferred is less than the fair value of the acquired business, goodwill is calculated based on the difference between the consideration and the fair value of the acquired identifiable net assets. And there is no distribution to be recognized. Again, in existing standards, this challenge never arises. Finally, looking at synergies between the combining parties, they are not reflected in either the full fair value approach or the ceiling approach because both approaches calculate and cap goodwill at the fair value of the acquired business. Synergies, however, are reflected under existing standards because they result in the recognition of purchase goodwill rather than goodwill internally generated in the acquired business. So now let's look to see how we can leverage.
Can I ask a question on the synergies?
Yeah.
So in IFRS 3, as I understand it, it's sort of an assumption that the fair value of the consideration transferred is equal to the fair value of what you get. And we do an analysis here making the point that synergies are, I think, included under IFRS 3 because we measure the fair value of the consideration, which is different to here. But given that 3 starts with the assumption that the two are the same, does it hold true? So IFRS 3, I think, sort of starts with the simplifying assumption that you don't have to measure the fair value of what you've acquired because we assume in an arm's length transaction those two things are the same. And so you don't have to worry about measuring it directly because you measure the consideration and you've done that job, right? Now here we're saying more things can be going on, so we're looking more carefully at the other side of the equation.
Yeah, exactly.
And so... is that the reason for the difference? The reason is because you're measuring directly now the fair value of what's acquired as opposed to the consideration.
Yeah. And the question is, if we're looking, and this is a very important point, so we're still looking to compare values exchanged, right? We want to see, you know, what was given away and what was acquired. And by comparing values exchanged, we're looking to identify the equity transaction. But then if we do that, then how do we measure goodwill in the value of what we have received? And basically what we're trying to do here in this revised approach, so we went back to what we did in April. We said, okay, under full fair value approach, we always look at fair value of the acquired business in all possible scenarios. In the ceiling approach, we only look at this fair value in some scenarios. Under existing standards, we don't rely on fair value of the acquired business at all. We assume that it equals to consideration. So we looked at whether and how we can leverage the mechanics of existing standards to help address the challenges in the ceiling approach. I wonder what would be, I can see that there are a lot of questions and comments already. Does it make sense to first look at the revised approach and then discuss? How do you want to do it?
Go ahead.
Or have you got some questions on the foundations?
I've got a couple comments about the foundations rather than the mechanics. One is, Yulia, what you were saying, I think there's a slight inconsistency between what you're saying and how it's shown, and I think shown appropriately on slide 12, which is, as you say on slide 13, IFRS 3 says use the fair value of the consideration as the basis for calculating goodwill.
Yeah.
But it isn't saying as the basis for assuming that's the fair value of what you'd acquired, because I think what your analysis has highlighted to me is that the fair value of what's acquired includes the inherent unrecognized goodwill in the business acquired, right? And that's the fair value of the business. Mm-hmm. In addition to the fair value of the business, which is value that any acquirer can realize, there's maybe synergies that are specific to the acquirer that are in excess of the fair value of the business, and that's the transaction-specific synergies. And what IFRS 3 assumes is that the fair value of the consideration transferred is equal to the fair value of the acquisition to the acquirer. So goodwill inherent in the business plus specific to the acquirer.
Yeah.
Yes. So and I think what I think it's important to bring out that what you're suggesting is that and I'm not objecting to it, I'm not debating it, but it's that we limit goodwill to the fair value of the business, kind of the fair value to any acquirer, without trying to capture and measure the piece that is the synergies specific to the acquirer, because that has even higher amount of measurement uncertainty than the goodwill inherent in the business.
Exactly, and all this relates to the approaches we discussed in April, and so this
But worry less about the mechanics and thinking more about which pieces we're trying to capture. I then have a second part, but...
But does that mean we start off with a slightly different basis to an IFRS 3 acquisition accounting? That's not just the equity transaction, it's also the synergy bit.
Yes.
So there's two differences.
Yeah. And I think, you know, bringing out that's because my suggestion for how we approach this and how to start describing it, and it comes to me, I think it's in here because it, you know, it's my articulation based on what you put here, is stand back and say, what's different about business combinations when they're between, I'll call them related parties. I'm not being precise in that. Controlled by the same entity. And what's different about them is that we've said we have to stop and think about whether there's some other kind of equity, you know, either contribution or distribution going on that might be embedded in the transaction. And so part of our objective in this group of transactions is to look at the transaction and say, is it just the business combination, i.e. paying for the, you know, the fair value, or is there something else going on that we have to pull out and account for, i.e. the contribution or distribution? And I think what you have built up so far is saying a simplification that we're going to bring into it because of the high degree of measurement uncertainty of synergy-specific goodwill is that we're going to base this determination of whether there's anything else kicking around in the transaction, we're going to limit recognized goodwill to the fair value of the business, not the identifiable net assets, but the fair value of the business. So that's why you're looking for mechanics that say this is the second difference that Sue highlighted, is we're not going to capitalize this goodwill synergies, you know, entity specific synergies in that purchase price.
So I just want to clarify, I agree with everything you say, Mary, but that was where we were in April. What we were looking to achieve now was to see, okay, is there a way to still sort of look or screen for this equity transaction, but still capture some of the acquisition-specific synergies? So where we were in April, you're right, okay, it's only goodwill internally generated in the acquired business. That's it. No synergies would be captured. So now we're trying to see, well, can we have both of those? Can we screen for an equity transaction and measure it in some shape or form? And can we still capture some of the unique synergies in this acquisition?
Okay, so my suggestion, even if you can, for the balance of this discussion, before diving into mechanics, start saying, in order to do X or in order to do Y, because I think we can get lost in the mechanics and not understand why you're making a tweak.
Yeah. So do my explanations help now?
Yes,
okay.
Just a clarification on this explanation, the merit. So the fair value of this acquired business is a little different from the normal fair value of the business. That's what you're saying. You know, the fair value of this acquired business is a kind of a modified version. So you don't include any kind of expected synergies. Just you calculate the internally generated goodwill of the acquired business.
Under the original approaches, yes. So under the original approaches, it is market participant perspective. Under the revised approach, we are trying to see, can we capture, acquire a specific sort of premium, if you will.
This is a fundamental, you know, starting point for the revision of the this depends on this thing, I guess, whether we need to clarify what the fair value of this kind of business. And whether how can you separate that some kind of expected synergies from this fair value of this acquired business? Because, you know, if we see just the IFRS 13, the fair value of the meaning of this, all everything is included, you know, that's there based on the maybe high and the best use of all kinds of this business from the market perspective. So it's not easy to understand how to separate the, you know, this kind of some benefits, synergy benefits from the value of the acquired business.
So conceptually what we're saying is that in a normal business combination, under IFRS 3, you have a transaction price and you rely on this transaction price. And there is an assumption that transaction price captures at a very high level two elements. It captures fair value of the acquired business sort of on a standalone business, including any internally generated goodwill, and it captures some of the synergies specific to the combination. So this is a regular business combination.
A plus B.
Yes, A plus B. Now we're saying, okay, in a business combination under common control, you might have a C. You might have like three things going on. There is fair value of the acquired business on a standalone business, basis. There are synergies specific to this combination, and there can also be an equity transaction. Yep. There can be a contribution or distribution. And the question is, can we separate those elements and account for them appropriately?
Martin.
No, I have also from people understood, okay, that we don't recognize then from the beginning this synergies which are specific to then the acquirer. But I have not understood why we don't doing that, because our starting point is always that we say, okay, maybe these transactions are not under market conditions. And that is I'm struggling with, because and is it really, do we have evidence that, I don't know, 90% of these transactions are not at market price and 10% are at, or is it other way around? Because I would prefer an approach saying, okay, if it is kind of for the non-controlling interest, okay, they want to have the same information as it is in kind of normal business combination, then if we assume it is a market price, normal don't have any, I think, difference between IFRS 3 and now what we do for this kind of. But if we have evidence that is not at market, then maybe we do something different. But our starting point is that we always assume it is not at market price, and I don't buy that in, because in this kind of situations, I think oftenly it is a kind, if you have non-controlling interest, and if you're doing that approach, and then you're in the accounting, you demonstrate that it is not at market. If I would be a kind of non-controlling shareholder, I would sue the company directly. If it's a two transactions which is not at market price, based on my it is an advantage of the, but often it is a disadvantage. I would immediately sue them. And I think that is also in many jurisdictions, it's a kind of company sue. Law. Sue them. Okay. Not sue. Yeah. And that is what I'm struggling with. But do we have sufficient research that this kind of transactions are in majority not at market price? That is what I'm struggling with. Because all this complexity is coming in because we assume it is not, as we've done in IFRS 3, at market.
So if I can quickly respond to that, and that's an excellent challenge, Martin. Thank you very much. So, we are not saying that we always assume that they are not on market. But we are saying that they can be not on market, because in a regular business combination, it's a bargain transaction. Independent parties negotiate, and they arrive independently to a transaction price. In a business combination under common control, it can be directed by the parent, and you can have a price which is different from what would have been negotiated. We do not have scientific or statistical evidence how often or to which degree transaction price under common control is different from a regular one. All we're saying, it can be different, and therefore we need to arguably screen if there is an equity transaction. If there is an equity transaction, we need to account for it. If there is none, then we don't need to worry about it.
Yeah, my idea is to start with, is it at market? Then, okay, we should use IFRS 3. Is it not at market? Then we do something different. The starting point is different. But now we assume for all transactions under common control in this kind of circumstance that it is not, and then we develop models which then are different or difficult or are different to IFRS 3.
And this is another valid approach. So we could do exactly that. We could start by saying, okay, if it is on market, if that can be supported, then they do IFRS 3, although we will probably still need to think about again in that case. And then if it's not on market price, we still need to think about what to do in those cases, which is what this is about.
Okay.
And it is
still got a chance. But.
And it is not, you're using the term on market, but it's certainly not at arm's length, right?
I think arm's length. When I said market price, I assumed it's arm's
length. But isn't it, given the common control?
Martin's point is that market can strike well. Protection of non-controlling interests might mean you have to act as if you were on arm's length.
In many countries, you have laws that protect minority shares.
If you have transactions,
it's controlled by shareholders, which then is not at arm's length. I think that is against law, and therefore I think it is often it is at arm's length, this kind of transactions. If you have, and that is what we're discussing, if you have minority shareholders. If you don't have minorities, then different picture.
Yeah.
The only thing I would like to respond to this as well is that Arguably, requirements in all jurisdictions are different, and also requirements can be different based on whether it's a listed company or it is a private company.
I agree.
Yeah.
Nick?
I think many users would challenge the presumption in IFRS 3 that the fair value of the consideration is equal to the fair value of the acquired assets anyway, and they'd be even more sceptical in a business combination under common control. But I think there isn't either buy-in from users or evidence to support that presumption in 3 to begin with.
Jen Chow.
Yes. So first, I agree with the point Martin made, whether the transaction is market price based or not. It's actually sometimes in practice it's very difficult to make a judgment. I'm very cautious about with too much address on the synergies. I think it's not so simple case. The synergies have different meanings. Here we address the expected synergies. That means the synergies after the acquisition date, what kind of synergy we should consider. And actually, there are another kind of synergy before the acquisition date, especially for those business combination under control. Those two entities, two business acquirers and acquirer and the acquired business already under the common control. So they already enjoyed the synergies before the acquisition date. So how can we distinguish those two different kind of synergies? Because those synergies has been already there before the acquisition date. After acquisition date, maybe they simply just restructured structure or just combine two business together. So I think it's quite difficult to distinguish those two different kind of synergies in practice, especially for BC UCC transactions. Secondly, I'm worried about that if we address too much about the expected synergies, what kind of goodwill we are measuring? Mm-hmm. We are measuring acquired goodwill, or we are measuring some kind of internal generated goodwill, because synergies arising from two sides. One is from acquired business, another is the business the acquirer already have. So how can we distinguish this kind of two kind of the goodwill? I think it's difficult, very difficult. So we should still focus on the business we acquired, not to consider the business or assets I already have. Because once we address the synergies, we have to consider all those assets, not only the business I acquired, but also the assets and the liability I already have. So I think in practice it's really difficult and become the issue quite complicated. And whether this kind of information we provide really useful to the users, and the users will really understand what kind of synergy we are measuring.
So you're happy with the fair value approach?
This is the next, yeah.
But only just this element that is not recognizing synergies. Because otherwise I don't understand.
If we go to the fair value, as I raised the previous, I worry about we are going to the fair value approach to account for those BCUCC. I also quite, but if we made a decision, we are going to using this fair value approach. I would like to, as Martin said, even the ceiling approach or capital ceiling approach, we are trying to capture the expected synergy. I think it's, in practice it's very difficult, and even we capture that, what kind of goodwill we are measuring, and what kind of information we have provided to the users, whether they understand it. What kind of things included in the goodwill? I think it's quite complicated, and with the way improving the information we are providing.
And
I think
we've got two big issues. One's around the incentives, because this is a business combination under common control. We've got some incentives there, and we have to think about this non-controlling interest and how they're affected by these non-arm's-length transactions. And then the other thing is we have to think about the measurement error in what we're doing. So as I understand the proposals now, Yulia, they're moving us closer to existing. We're making more use of existing ways of doing our accounting, drawing in now on IAS 36. So as we now go on and look at the mechanics, I think we have to keep in the back of our mind how we're dealing with these two big issues. One's the incentives, because it's not arm's length, and we have this non-controlling interest that can be disadvantaged by what's going on. And then in that context, thinking also about the uncertainty, measurement uncertainty that's already in our techniques. How does that fit in? And I think we have to think about that as we go into the mechanics.
Okay.
So mechanics? No mechanics. Okay. All right, so now we can talk a little bit about how and whether we could leverage any mechanics and existing standards and the challenges and to address those challenges that we've identified. Looking at initial accounting, for the transaction for a regular
slide 13
for a regular business combination, IFRS 3 does not require determining the fair value of an acquired business. Instead, it assumes that a regular business combination between unrelated parties exchange equal values and relies on the fair value of the consideration transferred. Also, it allows a measurement period of up to 1 year to complete the accounting for the transaction. For a business combination under common control, we could leverage those features by using the fair value of the consideration transferred as a basis for the initial accounting. And we could also allow for an appropriate measurement period to complete the accounting for the transaction. If we were to explore this approach further, we would need to consider what that appropriate measurement period would be. So now let's look at the subsequent accounting. In a regular business combination, goodwill is required to test for impairment, and IAS 36 sets out requirements for allocating goodwill acquired to each of the acquirer's cash-generating units that is expected to benefit from synergies in the combination, determining the recoverable amounts of those CGUs and recognizing any impairment loss. For a business combination under common control, the mechanics of the impairment test in IAS 36 could be used to capture the synergies and to identify and measure any equity transaction. Specifically, we could use those mechanics to determine how much of the amount transferred in the business combination under common control is related to the acquired business and to the expected synergies, and whether the amount transferred could include a distribution from equity. And just to remind you, this would only apply if the fair value of the consideration transferred is greater than the fair value of the acquired identifiable net assets. If the fair value of the consideration transferred is less than the fair value of the acquired identifiable net assets, a contribution is recognized. Slide 15 provides an overview of the evolution of the approaches that the staff has developed. We started off with the fair value approach, which uses the fair values exchange in order to identify and measure any equity transaction and to measure goodwill. That approach is broadly consistent with the principles of IFRS 3 and IS 1. We then look to limit the complexity and uncertainty relating to determining the fair value of the acquired business and develop the ceiling approach. And that relies on the mechanics of IFRS 3 to a greater extent than the full fair value approach. To address further the challenges inherent to both the full fair value approach and the ceiling approach, we now have the revised ceiling approach. So it uses the mechanics of existing standards instead of using the fair value of the acquired business. So now we can go through a few illustrative examples to see how the revised ceiling approach could work. So in scenario one of the fair...
Slide 17.
We're
outside this principle.
Slow down a little bit so we can listen a bit better.
Okay. So in scenario one, the fair value of the consideration transferred is greater than the fair value of the acquired identifiable net assets. And this scenario is the one that poses the most difficulties under the ceiling approach that we are looking to address. Scenario two illustrates the case where the fair value of the consideration transferred is less than the fair value of the acquired identifiable net assets. This scenario is not problematic under the ceiling approach and is included for completeness only. Slide 18 illustrates that scenario one, when the fair value of the consideration transferred is at 52 currency units, it's greater than the fair value of the acquired identifiable net assets of 48 currency units. And there would be, in the initial accounting, would result in a provisional goodwill of 4 currency units calculated between the difference of those two amounts. Slide 19 compares initial accounting for the transaction under the revised ceiling approach and compares it to IFRS 3. And as you can see, both approaches would result in the same amounts being recognized. So now we can look what happens after the transaction, moving on to slide 20. The idea is that we use the mechanics, again, from the impairment test in IAS 36 to test the provisional carrying amount of goodwill and to identify any equity transaction. And we would do this by allocating the provisional goodwill to each of the receiving entities, CGUs or groups of CGUs, that is expected to benefit from synergies of the combinations, applying the requirements in IAS 36 to measure the recoverable amount of those CGUs to which the provisional goodwill has been allocated, and then comparing the recoverable amount and the carrying amount of those CGUs to which the provisional goodwill is allocated. And the basic idea is that if the recoverable amount of the CGUs to which goodwill is allocated is less than the carrying amount of those CGUs, that suggests that the provisional carrying amount of goodwill needs to be adjusted, and there is possibly an equity transaction that we should recognize. If the recoverable amount of those CGUs is greater than the carrying amount, the provisional carrying amount of goodwill is confirmed, and there's no equity transaction that should be recognized. And there's a couple important points I want to flag here. Of course, this approach will only be as good as the impairment test in IAS 36. So, for example, the outcome of this test would be affected by the existing headroom in the CGU to which goodwill has been allocated. And again, as I discussed earlier, we will need to explore further how long we should consider an appropriate measurement period for this and how it should compare to existing standards and their measurement periods. So maybe should we
have some stop to breathe.
Pause for comments.
By the way, it's remarkable that on slide 15 that the full fair value approach is being depicted as a an ape in very primitive state of evolution. So this goes to disprove all those that think that we have a secret agenda to promote full fair value accounting as the epitome of accounting. Mary was first, I think.
I wanted to go back and almost repeat what Jingjiao said before. When I look at slide 20 and think about his comment, and I think that this is kind of what you were hinting at in terms of the revised ceiling approach is only as good as the impairment test, is your slide 15, middle, you know, the straightforward ceiling test, said we look to see if there's a distribution to the seller, an equity transaction to the seller, if the amount of the payment is larger than the fair value of the business, not the identifiable assets, but it just said, you know, here's the point we're capping, we're going to exclude what we were calling before B, the transaction-specific synergies. Here, on slide 20, the scenario used the mechanics of IAS 36, being just kind of, if the acquirer had large headroom and it's in that goodwill, you know, and it's in unrecognized goodwill, once you put the acquisition or a piece of the acquisition into a CGU that had unrecognized goodwill, you may be masking an equity distribution contribution, an equity distribution scenario by the acquirer's unrecognized goodwill. So I think I would have a lot of concern about whether we're exporting contamination, you know, as it were.
As Ashley said, it's as good as IAS 36.
Right. Yeah.
And that's why I started by saying that, of course, this approach has its own weaknesses and its own challenges. So it's a question of what is more important, where we want to gain, and where we are in the compromise, essentially.
Martin.
Yeah, I also want to say what Mary has already said. I think this impairment model, I think we're discussing in a different project that, okay, that is made, has difficulties to really come up with what is a real value, and then to use this kind of in a business combination or common control to then distinguish, really say, okay, what is a kind of arm's length transaction and what is an equity contribution or not, I think is difficult because, man, there is so much measurement uncertainty, and it's not only the headroom, it's like, I think different things that you, I think, can question, okay, the management measurement uncertainty in this impairment test. But overall, what I wanted to say, I think what we, what is relating what I said earlier, I think we trying to solve the kind of problem, is it a kind of arm's length transaction, yes or no? And if we identify it is not, then okay, account for an equity transaction or equity. And I think that even if we do it with the impairment test measurement model or with the kind of coming up with its management has to come up with what is the fair value of the business, often it's not listed transaction, listed companies that have to come up with their own valuation model. I think that we will not achieve that. That is my personal view. And therefore, I think we should go a different direction and say, okay, is it a kind of arm's length transaction, yes or no? And the management has to determine how much is it out of market or out of arm's length and then account for that. But due to accounting measurement models to distinguish between both, I think maybe we could achieve, but I'm not sure that we can, because we have this measurement uncertainty, which is very, very high. Because even if this was the fair value model, fair value is a good concept, but there is not a market fair value. It is a kind of fair value determined by level 3, maybe input, or level 2 at least. And therefore, I think it is very, very difficult.
Martin, can I just clarify one point you made? So when you said that it will be hard for management to measure fair value of the business, did you mean fair value of the business on a standalone basis? Or
both, because I think many people say, okay, if it is not, when we have a kind of how difficult it is to measure equity securities if it is not listed. When we have this in IFRS 9, we have it overall, and people say it is very, very difficult. You can only do it with a model, and therefore you have all this kind of uncertainty. You have to come estimation of kind of cash flows, which is then, and you have to give the terminal value, discount rates, all this kind of inputs which are not observable, and therefore I think that is a high measurement uncertainty. And we're using then that value to distinguish between, okay, what is a kind of acquisition and what is a kind of transactions between equity holders. And that is, I think, is difficult.
And
difficult, at least. I would not say impossible, but difficult. And therefore, I think maybe it is an other approach, because it has to be determined by management in 99% of all cases, I think. Why not starting with, okay, that management has to say, is it arm's length, yes or no, and then based on that, different conclusions.
I think the main challenge with that is if we were to follow the route where we'll say, well, management needs to assert whether it's on market or non on market, if we then say, well, they can't really determine fair value of the business, then how they can assert whether it is on market.
Yeah, but Julia, we're doing that. Mind, if you're asking management, okay, to come up with the fair value of the business, which is what you assume, and then you have the transaction price, it is management is saying that it's not at arm's length. If you're doing that, because you're paying more or less what you have determined is the fair value of the business. Why you have to pay more or less?
Daryl?
And this might be hopefully clarifying what I think, where I think Martin's landing, but I might have completely confused the picture. So my understanding of the model that you're proposing at the moment is inherently you are presuming that the price is at a fair market price. And that the only test that you have in place then is the only test we would have in place is the IAS 36 test, which, as Mary's acknowledged, as Mary's mentioned, is not necessarily a great test for catching stuff early because of this pre-existing headroom. So in the approach that we're having, we're going to have very few false negatives. We'll have some false positives. In other words, I may have overpriced, but because of headroom, I won't pick them up. But I'll have very few false negatives. I would pick up a loss, even though I had paid an appropriate value. because the IS 36 test would probably protect me against that most of the time. So if I think about that, if I assume that what we're starting with is we're starting with the assumption that it's fair value, what Martin's test does, and the way you were pitching it is almost we were, by putting that test in place, we prevent people from doing extra work. I think it's actually the opposite. I think this test is extra work because the way you've proposed the test, because I'm just presuming it's fair value, I'm very seldom going to pick up an equity contribution in this approach. If I add Martin's test on top of that, then that may lead me to an equity contribution that I would not otherwise have got if I just followed the process. And that's because what I'm assuming now is that I'm asking the management to make some sort of best endeavors statement that they have used fair value. If they can't do that, they would end up with a potential equity contribution. But otherwise, they just, if they can argue best endeavors, they then rely on IS 36. IS 36 will very seldom produce an outcome. Is that fair? Am I understanding correctly?
Julia's argument is that to make the assertion, they'll have to measure the fair value, right? So they have to do the work anyway.
Well, I suspect where the assertion comes from is it comes from those circumstances in which, for example, that's why I said best endeavours. So if I, for example, have had a third-party valuation and relied upon the third-party valuation, I could tick that box and go straight through. If I've done an internal valuation or my valuation is based on the fair value only of identified assets, I fail the test and I have to then think about a second process.
Right. So I think the only thing I would add to that is that part of the idea behind the three-wise seeding approach was that you will need to test goodwill on the annual basis anyway, and that's why Ashley stressed out the point about measurement period. So arguably, we can land in a place where there is no extra work because you need to do this impairment test anyway, but we're just saying, okay, can we rely on this test to see if there was an equity distribution as part of the transaction price on day one? So we could spin it in a way that it does not create extra work. It would all depend, again, on the timing. But then, of course, there are two challenges. So first of all, and I completely agree with what Mary said earlier, that this equity distribution could be masked if you already have a lot of headroom in the CGU to which you allocate your acquired business. The other problem, of course, is that if you're performing the test, let's say 1 year after the acquisition, trying to figure out what existed at the time of the acquisition versus what is the change in conditions over that period, this is going to be quite difficult, so there will be an amount of hindsight. But I think, you know, the outcome is that you can mask some of the distribution, but you will not recognize extra. So at the end of the day, it's all about how important it is to capture different elements. And how does that all relate then to costs and complexity?
In terms of this discussion, Martin's point's a fair one in terms of who's in the scope of having to do something different to sort of normal IFRS 3 accounting, if you like. But is it most useful for the discussion if we talk about, assuming we've got a population where we think we need to do something different, is this the right something different?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So let's talk about the mechanics, and then there's a fair question about how broad should the scope be in terms of application, but we could come back to that. But this is assuming we've decided we've got a population where we need to think more carefully. Yes. Is this a good way of thinking more carefully?
Yeah.
Gary.
thank you. And, I think, Julia, we need to keep in mind is that there is no perfect solution here. Everything's got baggage, no matter which direction you go. I mean, I hear the arguments on full fair value approach, but I support the ceiling approach because one is there is no market participant in this. It's an academic, you know, or theoretical construct. You know, maybe one can be determined, but that's not the transaction here. This is a related party transaction driven for the benefit of the parent. When you get it all through and done, whatever the parent wants or is important to the parent is what's driving it. the acquiring subsidiary, the reality is, I think most of the time, has got very little influence in the final transactions. The parents, this serves the parent, you know, for multiple reasons, perhaps. So I don't believe we should be looking to gross up goodwill bigger than the transaction that's sort of inside the controlled group would be at, which would be the ceiling approach, at least to my way of thinking. I mean, there's plenty of measurement uncertainty. I think this minimizes some of the risk by not having inflated goodwill, and I don't think you should gross up goodwill by virtue of essentially self-dealing. Now, when you get to, there's the fair value, the consideration too high or too low, I think there's governance, other forces out there that kind of help you kind of keep the numbers, you know, in a range of sanity. Because if you want an income tax deduction, they think in terms of either original cost, which would be predecessor, or fair value. I think the parent company's not likely to go and say we overpaid for it and gave some money away to our NCI shareholders unnecessarily, and they paid what it's worth to them. And likewise, they're not just saying we stuck it to our NCI shareholders either. They took a loss because of our self-dealing. So I think there's business forces that sort of keep, you know, all these numbers a bit in check. I mean, it might be not possible to write into a standard, but it might not need to be, because it's just kind of how these things do tend to work. Perhaps more often than not. I think with respect to 36, I think one of the premises of where we started was we're going to work with existing standards, go as far with them as we can. 36, I know we're working on it, but it may never change. And it may not change in a way that's useful for this project. We don't know. So I think we're kind of going to live with 36 as it exists today.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Just minor things, two minor things. One is the recoverable amount of the any CGUs are basically based on revenues. It's not the fair value. So most of many companies are using VIU. So in a sense, if the many companies using VIU as an amount of a recoverable amount, then they will make that amount quite close to the fair value consideration. So I'm saying, you know, it's naive to separate equity transaction and get a precise goodwill amount based on current practice. That's one thing. Another thing is, if you see your slide 29, and comparing with the way forward plan on page 12, the only adjustments on the goodwill is happening in the case of fair value consideration is greater than fair value of net assets, and also recoverable amount is less than the carrying amount. In that case, only goodwill is decreased by the amount of that difference, right? But basically, actually, when you explain the, you know, this kind of a revision of a ceiling approach, you would like to capture a kind of expected synergies, right? If you would like to capture expected synergies, that must be positive, right? But based on all these analysis, only adjustment is happening that to the, you know, decrease in goodwill.
Yes, this is because we assume to begin with that this is a fair amount of goodwill, if you will, but then we test it. So we sort of, to begin with, we include everything, and then we're saying, okay, let's check, is there actually an equity distribution in there? That's why the adjustment always only goes down.
A plus B.
Oh, you are starting with A plus B.
Then saying, but do we have to claw back some of that because it might be, some of B might be actually a distribution.
But based on this slide 12, you know, there are full fair value approach, ceiling approach, they, you know, do not capture anything. Expect the synergies in goodwill, you calculate it. So that's I thought that's a B, only B, not plus A. So we are trying to capture plus A, expect the benefits, synergies based on this revision. No, that's not true. Anyway, okay, please consider that one. But as the Qing Chao said, you know, under the common control, there are subsidiaries A and B, then all internally generated within might be a kind of some kind of synergy between these all members of this group. So I guess, you know, that's a good example, you know, how to separate everything, you know, in this kind of players. Maybe if the business combination on the, you know, on the, in the normal situation, it might be much easier to say this is the internal generator and this is expected synergy. But in the case of under common control, the parents can do anything. You know, actually, all these are enjoying all kind of synergy effects, you know, already for a long time. So they are doing something. So there we can't say, you know, this is a kind of an internal general good deal and this is an expected benefit.
Thank you.
Thank you, Hans. I'm thinking that we try to using some mechanics to, the objective is to confirm the goodwill we recognized and measured at the acquisition date. So if this is our objective, I think the measurement basis should be based on the fact and circumstances as of the acquisition date, not to consider the fact and circumstances after acquisition date. Even there is a further information available, those information only to confirm the fair value of the consideration we paid and the fair value of those identifiable assets and liability acquired, and then to make adjustments to the goodwill. So this should be our objective. But if we're using impairment loss model, I think we move too further. Because we're not only concerned this kind of further information, we have fundamentally changed the approach, not to confirm the goodwill, we are remeasured the goodwill using, you know, so-called expected synergies. And because expected synergies has been included so many factors, facts and circumstances after the acquisition date, about including how acquire, manage those, you know, assets, liability, how integrate those business. So I think if we would like to this using this kind of mechanism, I would like to favor the IFRS 3 approach. We're using the measurement period approach has been specified in IFRS 3, only to confirm the goodwill we recognized and measured based on fact and circumstances as of acquisition date. Further information available only to confirm that data is correct or not.
How do you propose to use IFRS 3 to confirm goodwill?
Not the same concept as an IFRS 3, I think.
Yeah, same concept.
Measurement period is confirming what was the case at the acquisition date.
Yes, 1 year period after that. Because assets and liability, because some information had not available, but after that, I available some further information, I can confirm that, but do not change, fundamentally change those, that measurement basis. This is, if we are using the carry recoverable amount, actually we are changing the measurement basis. So this is,
Nick?
Whether it's a conventional business combination or a business combination under common control, investors are trying to solve the same problem. What return on investment am I going to get over the medium term from this transaction? And our focus, our discussion, and I guess correctly, is around a balance sheet approach to this, whether it be fair values exchanged or historic costs. But the reality of either approach is that there are too many pieces of the jigsaw missing to solve that, and there's dispute over the size of some of those pieces of the jigsaw as well. And so I think it's inevitable, yes, we need to find an accounting solution here, but it's inevitable that disclosure has to play a part here as well, whether it's about the expected value of the synergies, whether it's about the acquired debt, which would be absolutely critical in business combination under common control. So I think this has to be a package that, as with conventional business combinations, we need to think alongside the balance sheet, the accounting solution. It will be a check investors will have on whether the numbers that these solutions come up with are actually the right numbers.
Okay.
I agree. Maybe we can provide additional disclosure to show those expected synergy achieved or not. I think it's a better way to do so.
Tak.
Thank you. I support staff's direction, which is the revised ceiling approach. I think the point is the protection of the minority interest. As Martin pointed out, in some jurisdictions, once there is a minority interest, then these transactions should be arm's length. It is true. But it is not always the case in every jurisdiction. And we are creating international accounting standards. So judgment of arm's length is really difficult. If you look at the case of international transfer pricing, the judgment of arm's length transaction is really, really difficult when it comes to the international transaction. So therefore, I think the ISB should provide some principle or some discipline to incorporate, assuming that once it is the under common control transaction, we assume it might not be the arm's length transaction. So then introduce some discipline into the mechanism is really important. And I think I really like your proposal. You are trying to minimize the change of the practice, trying to use the legacy of our standards. So to use the IS 36 is the only possible approach. I understand lots of concerns about the technical concerns of using IS 36 to make a cap. However, at the moment, IS 36 is accepted, and then use it as a cap mechanism is the most effective way. So I really support the direction of the staff.
Mary?
As I think about the discussion we're having, a first reaction overall is, and I think this may be where Gary was coming from before, I tend more to the ceiling than the revised ceiling test. I was trying to just draw it as pictures for myself right now, and I think that the question is whether we can do anything to try and make the accounting look more like a normal, business combination. In other words, to identify and measure specifically the transaction-specific synergies piece and leave that in goodwill. And I think on the whole, I am convinced, I am not convinced that there's so much measurement precision that we can separate out the potential extra payment from the synergies. And so while I think if you are to try and do that, I can't think of anything better than IS 36 to look to in our existing mechanics to attempt that. Some of the discussions that we've been having about IS 36 have highlighted some of the challenges. And as I think about the different things we're trying to measure and how we'd use it, I think we'd be adding more complexity and increasing the risk of measurement uncertainty for something that, Nick's points were saying is inherently hard to manage anyway. And if I look at the different components, I think that there's a better chance of reducing measurement uncertainty. Even if what you say you're trying to measure is the market participant view of the acquired business rather than rather than the fair value of pieces of the business. Because let's assume that as opposed to you're buying something small and it goes into one CGU, you're buying something big and you're going to have to take it into several pieces that go into several CGUs, you know, you're kind of doubling down on the risk of measurement uncertainty. So so I agree that we would be creating a difference from a third-party transaction in which you're recognizing goodwill that's specific to the transaction because of, you know, we're calling it synergies, although Jing Zhao pointed out to us it may just be I'm willing to pay more because I know I have a big unrecognized goodwill as the acquirer that will shield this. I'd say let's give up on trying to make it so close to existing IFRS 3 transactions and realize that we may end up, you know, overstating the amount of the deemed distribution because we aren't capturing those synergy goodwills. And let's just stick with the ceiling test because it reduces to me the risk of measurement uncertainty. And when you start getting into more complex businesses being moved around, would be significantly less complex calculation.
I think two comments. First, I want to elaborate a little bit. I have sort of an additional concern with this using IAS 36. So I think picking up on what Daryl said, given that there is headroom and some other stuff out there, in general, I think this will result in an adjustment only rarely. So if I go back and think, what are the contenders for this? We have kind of a predecessor amount, a sort of contender, and then we have just apply IAS 3, you know, let's say whatever the difference between consideration transferred and the identifiable fair values is goodwill. So I'm going to call those two. So predecessor is lowest cost. Then we have the second one, a little bit more cost. And we're trying to kind of amend this one to put in a bit of conservatism by putting in the IAS 36. And I think it's only going to result in adjustment rarely. The second point I want to make is consider a whole series of potential subsidiaries, all with the really true, you knew exactly what the actual combination synergies and the fair values, you actually knew the goodwill just in your mind, pretend it exists. They're all the same. This thing will actually produce different results depending on, and I'll say, if you stick the acquiree into a standalone CGU, that's when this will work best because there'll be no headroom from the other stuff, and you're not smearing it across several CGUs. However, in practice, if you start smearing it across several CGUs, and each with different headrooms and stuff, what will happen, and if you start with always the same true goodwill, in the case where it goes into the standalone, you might make an adjustment. In the case where you smear it across five with lots of headroom, there'll be no adjustment. And that's why in my mind game, I said these are identical transactions getting different accounting treatments out of this. And I don't think, so we're losing representational faithfulness as well as the fact that I think it's going to be relatively rare. And I think that's a problem with, as I think Martin said, there's problems with IAS 36. I'm not sure we're going to do anything with it, as Gary said, but I think importing it here probably doesn't solve the problem we're trying to solve with this, this case. So that leaves my second comment. Again, I'll go back. So we have this sort of lowest cost predecessor, higher cost, just apply IFRS 3. And can we do something that says where we're going to tell you something really useful about the difference between the consideration transferred and some kind of conceptual theoretical fair value? It's can we produce a number that's actually informative? And I'm not sure we can. I think Martin's quite skeptical. I was listening to him. And I'm not sure we could. But I would say the following. I think one of the things when I first looked at this, I thought it would be impossible. And I spent a lot of time thinking about possible ways you might measure it. I now think that it would be possible to create a measure that would tell you something. It would, however, be clearly costlier than just doing the IFRS 3 thing. You're going to have to do some measurement and stuff. and you do it at the time. And so then the question would it be useful enough? The other comment, the other question I ask myself is there a likelihood of this consideration transfer departing from this fair value theoretically, which I think is a necessary condition? And I thought of some circumstances. I don't have a kind of a census, but I thought of, like, why might it occur? Well, it might occur, for example, suppose you were going to combine them and do a spin-off, and you decided to give the subsidiary shareholders a chunk of the money to be made from the spin-off. That would take the consideration transferred above the fair value of the combined thing if you did focused only on synergies. And you might give them something. And the consideration transferred in that case would be different. Could be different because there's tunneling going on. Tunneling is when people in a corporate hierarchy higher up essentially appropriate wealth from people lower down. Again, fair amount of empirical evidence this happens. Article in the Wall Street Journal a week and a half ago referencing tunneling. So this can happen, and in which case the consideration transferred might be more or less. And again, you do have resource to the courts and you have resource to legislation, but as Tack pointed out, we're doing it for the world, and so that could happen. I think we might kind of think about whether we could create this optimal measure, and I have a couple ideas. I won't go here because it's too complicated. But I am sympathetic, though, that we may end up just back at predecessor's lowest cost, simple IFRS 3 is next lowest cost, and could we get enough information content out of this thing? But I don't think this particular solution, although if we had a perfect IAS 36 test, it's reasonably conceived, but I don't think we do. So that's kind of where I am at this time.
François?
I think there's been a lot of input given in this discussion. But before we would either say this revised ceiling approach should be pursued or whether we would say no, better go to the ceiling approach, I think one element of thinking, in my view, is important, and it is the less the evaluation that needs to be made will be solely made in order to arrive at the accounting of the acquisition, the better place we would be. So one of the features that I still like, by the way, in this revised ceiling approach is that we were moving into a context in which the value in use could enter into play. Mm-hmm. When the value in use would enter into play, you would use the budgets. And when you would use the budgets, you would be in a position of having a valuation where the interest of the management of the acquired entity would no longer be aligned with the interest of the management of the parent. So having this element of valuation which exists independently from the acquisition was, in my view, a very strong feature. Now, I mean, we're looking at eventually a variant from the acquisition method and seeing how we can protect, in fact, the valuation from an overestimation of the consideration. When we do that, we have full freedom of using elements of existing standards without necessarily being constrained by the way they're determined. So the fact that, you know, the reference to IAS 36 to me doesn't mean that it could not be also a variant of what exists in IAS 36. So I think we have complete freedom in what we decide. And if we wanted to go ahead with this, for example, I mean, taking into account the headroom that exists would be a possibility. It's not because it's not in IAS 36 that it cannot be, you know, implemented in whatever we're building here. So that's what I wanted to say.
All right. Would it be possible for the staff to summarize what they heard?
Yeah.
Right. So first of all, I'd like to say that it's been a very helpful discussion for us, so thank you very much for that. I think it all comes down to the question about, at the end of the day, okay, we have this transaction price. We acknowledge that it might include fair value of the acquired business on a standalone basis. It might include synergies specific to the combination, and it might include distribution. So the key question is which of those elements we are trying to capture for a business combination under common control. We either give up on trying to capture synergies, that's one approach, or we are trying to capture synergies, that's a different approach. But at least it's very clear that there are three building blocks, and we just need to decide whether and how we can capture those in accounting model. Then, of course, there is an additional question about disclosures, which is sort of on our list as well. I think disclosure is probably the next step, because before we think about disclosures, we need to figure out what accounting will do, and then, you know, we can think about how we can provide additional information via disclosures. I think my other takeaway is that we've heard some support for the ceiling, or some preference for the ceiling approach. We had some support and preference for the revised ceiling approach. I don't think I heard, at least at this meeting, much support for full fair value approach. So that's, again, helpful for us to know. And secondly, or lastly, or thirdly, or fourthly, I'm not sure, there is Martin's question about, or challenge about, to which degree we assume that a transaction under common control is not an arm's length, and to which degree we assume that it is. So that's something for us to take away and think about as well. So these are my main takeaways.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
We take a break till 20 past.